What is, thank you very much, what is the main issue in our Gemara? Because it's always important to not get lost in all the Rishonim. It's always important to make sure you've clarified what's the main issue. The main issue, you know, again, just as an introduction, we're going to be talking about, oh, but the shuls were built off Tanai, and what does that mean it was built on Tanai, and what is defined Kalos Rosh? Those are all the details. What's the main issue? The main issue is a local issue in Bava Basra, because that's what we're learning, Bava Basra. The Gemara there, here, on Daf Gimel Beis, says that you're not allowed to destroy a shul until you build another one, a replacement, unless you see a tiyua, unless you see a crack, and then you need to rebuild it right away. And yet the Gemara tells us that even though that's the halacha, when it happened before, Rav Ashi went out of his way to do something very extreme in order to not just rely on this kula, but to make sure that the shul would be rebuilt as quickly as possible. And what did he do?
He slept in the shul.
He slept, he brought his bed in, and he slept in the shul. So Tosfos picks up on a side point. How in the world can Rav Ashi sleep with his bed in the shul? Haray, you're not allowed to sleep in a shul. As Tosfos says, we say, Bate Kinesios, Ein Yishenem Behem, Lo Sheinas Kefa, Velo Sheinas Arai. Now you might notice something interesting in this Tosfos. That Tosfos is asking Akasha based on the Gemara that tells us you're not allowed to sleep in a shul. If you'll notice, there are no parentheses in the Tosfos telling you where this is. Isn't that strange? Why doesn't Tosfos tell you? Where's the source? Because there is no immediate source. If you look at the Gemara in Megillah, which is where we've been discussing things, the Braisa in Megillah, what is glaringly absent from the Braisa? The Tanel's like, what are you talking about? Don't tell me it's not there. Take a look at the Braisa. Tana Rabbanan, Chaf Chai Samad Aleph. Very good. Bate Kinesios, Ein Nogin Ben Kawas Rosh. Which Rashi tells us is like the title. Colon. What is Kalos Rosh? Ein Ochlin Bohen. I would have said Kalos Rosh means to like play ball. You can't do Kalos Rosh, and you also can't eat, and you also can't drink. The Rashi says, no. There's this general category. It's called Kalos Rosh. And Kalos Rosh means anything which makes Kal, the shul, lessens the seriousness of the place. Meaning you do mundane things. Such as, Ein Ochlin Bohen, Ein Shosin Bohen, Ein Niusin. What does that mean, Ein Niusin? What does that mean? Ein miskashtin
l'tochem.
What?
Noi.
To anoint. Okay, miskashtin, in general, that means to put on jewelry. So I don't know if it means ein miskashtin, does that mean you can't anoint with, you can't beautify yourself in the shul? But you can't come to shul looking good? L'chor, it doesn't mean that. What do you think it means? Ein miskashtin. L'tochem.
You can't do it in the shul.
Can't like put on your jewelry in the shul, okay? Ein metailin bohem, what does ein metailin mean?
Stroll around,
right, going on a trip. You're not going to go on a trip in a shul. It means you can't, like, walk around. It means like schmoozing around and hanging out. Let's go hang out in the shul. It's air conditioning. Like, hang out in the shul.
Like everyone does that right after.
Okay. What about literally going on a tour? Like, is it okay to tour shuls? And you, like, walk around the shul, right? You walk around, oh, it's really nice. Ein metailin behem, it means like to chill, to hang out in the shul. Ein nechnasin behem bechama, you can't go in, and because of the heat, meaning, oh, it's air conditioned, let's go. Ubi geshamim means in the times of the rain, because of the rain. Ein maspidin behem hespeid shel yachid, you can't give a hespeid, but you're allowed to learn there. You can learn Torah, you shonin behem, you can learn Mishnah. And you're allowed to say a hespeid for the rabbim or for a big talmid chacham. What's not in this braisa? Doesn't say anything about not sleeping. In fact, this line that Tosfos quotes, "Ein yishenin behem lo sheinas kevav lo sheinas arai." You can't sleep there. Not a long sleep. Not a little nap. That line doesn't appear anywhere, and that's why there's no parentheses.
Yeah.
The closest, one second, the closest source. Why, yours does have a source?
Yeah.
Oh, the closest source is the Tosefta.
Oh, it's
I put it on your source sheet. The Tosefta, by the way, do you guys know where to find the Tosefta?
Tosefters are always printed at the end of the Masechta. I don't know if it is in these little mini guys. But anyone have a big Megillah here? Oh, this one actually has it for Beitza. Oh, thank you. So just to educate you a little bit, you have a Megillah, we have to be at home in a Shas, right? We have to know where everything is. So if you flip to the back, I don't know if this Pesach Hagillion is. This is some new edition. I don't know what that is. But here, Tosefta Megillah. They always print in the back the Toseftas. What's the Tosefta? Tosefta is Miloshen Hosefa. It's extra Mishnayos. Didn't make the cut. These didn't make it into the actual Mishnayos, but these are oftentimes elaborations on the Mishnayos that we have. So if you take a look in the end of Perek Beis, Mishnah Yud Aleph, or Tosefta Yud Aleph, sometimes Toseftas are quoted in Shas, like when they'll say like Tana Rabbanan, sometimes it's Tosefta. Whenever there's like a Braisa quoted, you look on the side, it'll tell you, in the source of Shas a lot of times, it'll tell you, what is it? Is it the, is it a Tosefta, is it a Braisa? So here we're told, but they can ACO say Nogin Ben Kalus Rosh, Lo Yichnas Lohen, Lo Bechama, Me'achama, Ubitzina, Me'asina, da da da, yada yada yada, Ve'ein Yishenin Bahen, and you can't sleep in them. Doesn't say the same thing our Tosso says, Ein Yishenin Ben Moshenas Keva, Moshenas Arai. So we don't know where Tosso's got this from. But it doesn't appear in our Brisa, it doesn't appear in our Tosefta. So the whole question, first of all, is questionable. Is there really such a din that you're not allowed to sleep in a shul? Tosa says you're not even allowed to nap in a shul. Okay, but let's assume, that's just the Hara Ba'alma, let's assume Tosa's question is a good question. You're not allowed to sleep in a shul. If you're not allowed to sleep in a shul, how did Ravashi bring his bed in there and sleep in the shul? We are going to discuss four answers. In order to discuss those answers, we are going to have to be nichnas into the sugya and Megillah. But I want you to know the general framework. We're going to be looking at four answers to this question. So let's begin with answer number one. Answer number one is based on what Rashi says. It's what Tosa says not to say. But it's one answer. The answer of Rashi is that this story takes place in Bavel. Sure enough, Rashi lived in Bavel. And in Bavel, they made a Tanai. If you read that Gemara over there in Megillah, in Daf Chavches, so the Gemara first introduces the Braisa. You're not allowed to do Kalos Rosh in a shul. Can't eat, can't sleep, the chule. And then the Gemara says, but Rav Asi taught that the shuls in Bavel were built al Tanai. Now, if you just look at the basic structure of the Gemara, Rashi seems to be giving a very good pshat. Let's just get the structure of the Gemara. It says, Tanur Avanan, Ein, Osin, Kalos Rosh. Let's assume Kalos Rosh means Machila, Shtia, and Shena. Again, it doesn't say Shena, but let's assume that that's right. So you're not allowed to do Kalos Rosh. That's point number one in the Gemara. Then the Gemara says, in the name of Ravasi, in Bavel, Asu Bate Kinesios Al Tanai. Now, the immediate context sounds like, what's Ravasi teaching me? I know that there's a brice that says you're not allowed to eat and sleep and drink in a shul, but in Bavel, you are allowed to, because they made a Tanai. When they built them, they said, listen, and Tosas clarifies this. The Kedusha of a shul, Tosas here argues with what your Gan teacher told you, that when Mashiach comes, all the shuls and chutzlarts are going to pick up and fly to Eretz Yisrael. I know that's the shita of the Gan, the Ganenets, but Tosas holds differently. It's a machlokas. Tosos holds differently. Tosos says, "Bimheira v'yameinu, what's going to happen?" It's, by the way, it's a chazal. It's not your ganenet didn't make it up. There's a chazal like that. So, yeah, I know. You almost lost faith in your ganenet. There's a chazal like that. But Tosos here says, what's going to happen? Soon, Mashiach's going to come. I don't see this often in Arisham. Soon, the Goel's going to come, Bimheira v'yameinu, and Tipoka, the Kedusha. The Kedusha of the shuls are always going to leave. Because we're going to leave Chutzlarts. The shuls are all going to lose their Kedusha. That's what Tosos says. And therefore, Tosos says the Kedusha of a shul in Eretz Yisrael, that's a hardcore Kedusha, full-fledged Kedusha that's going to last forever. But the Kedusha of the shuls in Chutzlarts is only temporary. Because Behera Yavo, the Goel, is going to come, and all the shuls are going to lose their Kedusha. So since the Kedusha anyway is temporary, you're allowed to put a Tanai on the Kedusha and say, we here in Hendon, we need a shul, but we also need a place to have a bris once in a while, a suda for a bris,
We need a convention hall once in a while. We're going to need it for other purposes. And therefore, the Kedusha is al tanai. When we're using it for a shul, it has Kedusha of a shul. But when we want to use it for mundane purposes, eating, sleeping, drinking, we're allowed to use it for mundane purposes. And that's how Rashi read the Gemara in Megillah. That the tanai was telling me that I'm allowed to use a shul for mundane purposes. So that's how Rashi understood the Tanai. That the Tanai,
Rashi learns, is even bivinyana. It's even when the shul is built, the Tanai is operative.
Because the Tanai was, we're allowed to use the shul for mundane purposes.
In just Bavel or any
Chutzlar? In Bavel. I would say, let's say Chutzlar as well. At the time of the Gemara, there was only the two communities where it's Israel and Bavel. Lefi Rashi, so we understand why Rav Ashi was able to bring his shul. Because since the Gemara, it's not even Okimta. Rav Ashi lived in Bavel. That story was clearly taking place in Bavel. So why was Rav Ashi allowed to sleep in the shul? Because there's a Tanai in Chutzbar that you're allowed to use the shul for mundane purposes. Okay. While we're on the topic of the Gemara, there is one other line in the Gemara that we should just clarify according to Rashi. The Gemara says that it's al Tanai. And again, according to Rashi, this meant
bivinyana. You're allowed to use it.
There's one more stage of the Gemara. The Gemara says, v'afal pichein, and even though there's a Tanai,
ein osin kalos rosh.
And the Gemara says, what does that mean, kalos rosh?
Cheshbonos. To sit there and do business deals. You're not allowed to do business deals.
Now, we realize there's a little bit of an internal steer here in this Gemara. Gemara said, you're not allowed to do Kalos Rosh. Comes along Ravasi and says, yeah, but in Chutzlarts you can, because they made a Tanai. Then the Gemara says, yeah, but even though there's a Tanai, you can't do Kalos Rosh. The Gemara needs to clarify what Kalos Rosh means, because the Gemara just, this line was matir. The Tanai was matir you to do Kalos Rosh. Kalos Rosh meant Achila Shdiyashina. You're allowed to do those things. So what does the Gemara here mean when it says, but even though there's a Tanai, you can't do Kalos Rosh? So the Gemara needs to explain that Kalos Rosh means Cheshbonos. And according to Rashi, what's the obvious understanding of this Gemara, that Cheshbonos is a very, very high level of Kalos Rosh. There's two types of Kalos Rosh. There's low-grade Kalos Rosh. There's slightly mundane purposes, eating, drinking, and then there's real mundane purposes, which is doing business deals. It's one thing for me to say, listen, I'm in the shul, I want to take a nap. I'm in the shul, I'd like to have a bite to eat. That is a minor desecration of the shul. But to sit and do a business deal? Oh, that's a major desecration of the shul. That's how Rashi learns the Gemara. So the Tanai means that bivinyana, you're allowed to use the shul. And that last line, that even though there's a Tanai, you can't do Kalos Rosh, it's because Cheshbonos is Kalos Rosh Gadol. It's real, real Kalos Rosh. Okay. And this is explained by the Ran and Megillah that I gave you in the Makoroshi. The Ran explains for Rashi that you need to learn that Cheshbonos must be a real serious infraction of Kalos Rosh.
According to Rashi, would Zriya be on par with...
So we don't know what Rashi would hold about Zriya. He's not mityaches to Zriya. So we're going to introduce that question in a minute, and then I'll bring up what did Rashi say about this. Right now we don't know about Zriya. Okay? Okay. Next. So we've dealt with our first answer. Answer number one.
Rav Ashi, how was he able to sleep in the shul? Answer number one, because it is in Bavel, and there's a Tanai in Bavel. This is Rashi. Okay.
Answer number two is Tosfos. Tosfos says, a big Okimta. He didn't sleep in the shul. What do you mean? It says he slept in the shul.
No, no, no. He slept in the shul building, but he didn't sleep in the sanctuary. And when we're told that you're not allowed to do Kalos Rosh, that doesn't mean in the building, it means in the sanctuary. So in a certain sense, he's making no kimta in both Gemaras. Our Gemara that said Rav Ashi slept in the shul means specifically the sanctuary. But every shul has like side rooms, and that's where he slept. He slept in the side room. He didn't sleep in the sanctuary. And he's making no kimta in Megillah. When the Gemara in Megillah says you're not allowed to do Kalos Rosh in a shul, I would have thought, right, like some kids are like running around in like the in the hallways and someone's like, hey, it's a shul, stop running around. And you turn back and you go, what do you mean? We hold like Tosfos. Tosfos learns that the Kalos Rosh means in the sanctuary you can't do Kalos Rosh. But you're allowed to do Kalos Rosh in the hallways, in the side room. So that's how Tosfos explains. Now, why would Tosfos make these okimtas? So let's just write it out. Answer number two, Rav Ashi slept in a side room. He slept in a side room. Tosfos feels the need, apparently, to support himself because it's a big okimta. So he says, yeah, this is not such a crazy thing to say because there are other Gemaras where we need to say this also. This is a famous Gemara in Psachim, in Arve Psachim, that says, I don't know how many people shuls here make Kiddush and shul on Friday night in the shul. Anyone shul do it? Oh, a bunch of your shuls. Okay. B'nai Sherem?
No. It's Romer.
Romer does it also. Okay. When I grew up, I always knew that there was one shul in Teaneck does not do it that I went to. The other shul does do it. They make Kiddush. At the end of davening on Friday night, all the kids come up and they have like those little cups and they take out the big thing of kedem grape juice and they make kiddush and shul. You guys do it also?
Yeah,
I can see. You don't do it in your shul? I can see like in England, like them still doing it. It's like formal. It's
like
in
the United Synagogue.
In the United Synagogue, for sure they do it. Yeah. Right. And they're not using kedem grape juice. No, like the Queen's wine or something. Right. So, from the Royal Vineyard. So, why do they make Kiddush in shul? So the Gemara says, for all the Orchim were sleeping in the shul and eating there, and they're not going to meals, they're eating and sleeping in the shul. Wait a second. But you're not allowed to eat and sleep in a shul. So you might have said, oh yeah, it's in Bavel, and there's a Tanai in Bavel, but that's not only in Bavel, that's everywhere. In Eretz Yisrael also they make Kiddush. Why? For the Orchim. How can there be Orchim sleeping and eating in the shul in Eretz Yisrael? The answer must be, that in a side room you're allowed to. And they weren't eating and sleeping in the sanctuary. They were eating and sleeping in a side room. So Tosfos is just pointing out that even though I'm making okimta, it's not such a crazy thing. Because we're going to need to make this okimta anyway for that Gemara in Psachim. That Gemara in Psachim that talks explicitly about poor people eating and sleeping in the shul, or visitors, travelers. So they would sleep in a side room. But the question I'd like to address, then I'll take your questions, is why did Tosfos not just say like Rashi? And the reason why Tosfos doesn't say like Rashi, first of all, he tells us explicitly why. And it's because he understands the Tanai differently in Megillah. So the way Tosfos explains our Gemara is dependent on his differing understanding of the Gemara in Megillah. And he has a kasha on Rashi. Rashi said that the Tanai means when the shul is functioning, you're allowed to use it for mundane purposes. But Tosfos notes that there's a Gemara on the same exact Amud, later on in the page, which seemingly is Sosa Rashi's interpretation. What's that Gemara? The Gemara says that there were some Amoraim who were standing outside discussing the Sugya, and it started to rain. So they went inside. And the Gemara is very clear to tell us, it's teaching us. They didn't go inside because of the rain. They went inside because the rain was causing them to not being able to concentrate. And you need a clear mind in order to concentrate, in order to learn. If you're sitting there getting rained on...
Wouldn't they be allowed to go in anyways? Because if they're learning, like, why can't they go inside and learn?
Yeah, but they were learning outside. The only reason they were going in was to get out of the rain.
But it's not like they weren't. They were just hanging out. Like they were learning.
So that's true. But since they were able to learn outside, the only thing that allows them to go inside is if they're going to learn better. Why are they going to learn better? Because it's hard to learn in the rain. How about just say they went in because it's raining and they didn't want to get wet. And the shuls are built al tanai, and therefore you're allowed to go in for the rain. You're allowed to sleep. You're allowed to eat. From the fact that the Gemara goes out of its way to tell me that the reason they were allowed to go into the shul was because your learning is better when you're not getting rained on, must be that it would not have been enough to go in just to get out of the rain. And Tosos sees this as an indication that Rashi misunderstood the Tanai. The Tanai does not allow you to use it bivinyana. If you were able to use the shul for mundane purposes bivinyana, these rabbis would have just gone in to get out of the rain. Now, I'm not 100% convinced that this is a slam dunk proof, because maybe they could have gone in for the rain, but that's not why they went in. Meaning, maybe these rabbis went in because they needed a clear mind. Maybe they could have gone in. I know it says they didn't go in. Maybe that's like teaching me like a din in like being able to learn Torah better. It's not telling me that it's... Maybe they could have gone in for the rain, but in this story, they didn't go in because of the rain. They went... Maybe they had umbrellas. But even when you're under an umbrella, it's very loud and it's noisy, and it's much easier to concentrate when you're indoors. So I'm not sure that it's a proof, but I'm not sure if it's like 100% what we would call a muchruch proof. Is it absolutely muchruch, this raya?
No.
Again, the Gemara doesn't say, and they didn't go in because the rain, because that would have been usser. It just says the reason they went in is because to really learn well, you need a clear mind. Yeah? The reason why these rabbis in this story went in is because they were having trouble concentrating.
It also, it should have just mentioned that, but it also mentioned, it went out of its way to mention...
Right, that's Tosafos' point, but does that mean that it would have been usher to go in for that reason?
Yeah. The Gemara could have just said simply...
See, I would have thought that this Gemara is a proof that to really learn well, you can't have any dagos, and you can't have other things on your mind. You have to really be able to like get into a zone and be... And that's maybe what the Gemara is teaching. Maybe the Gemara is teaching me something about Talmud Torah. And it's telling me that you should know, these rabbis didn't just go in for the rain. They could have, but that's not why they went in. They went in because they wanted to be able to be in the ideal situation and setting for learning. And that's what the Gemara is teaching me. Okay, listen, I'm not saying Tosafos is wrong. I'm just pointing out that I'm not sure if let's call it a 99% riot. It's not a 100% riot. Okay, if you accept it, accept it. If not, I'm open to arguing about it. But this is how he rejects Rashi. And therefore, Tosafos gives a different explanation in our Gemara. That's the end of the second explanation in our Gemara. But before we move on, I just want to tie up a few loose pieces in the Gemara and Megillah. So Tosafos told us what he does not think the Tanai is. So what is the Tanai? How does he learn the Tanai in the Gemara and Megillah? It doesn't mean that while the shul's built, you're allowed to use the shul for mundane purposes. And that's why he had to give a different explanation, that he slept in a side room. Because you can't use the shul for mundane purposes. Well, then what was that Tanai that was introduced in the Gemara? Remember, the Tanai was introduced right after the Gemara that says you're not allowed to sleep in a shul. You're not allowed to eat in a shul. So what's the Tanai? So Tosafos explains the Tanai differently. According to him, the Tanai was that once the shul is destroyed, you're allowed to use the shul for mundane purposes. The Tanai means that Kozman, the shul, is standing. It's a shul, and there's nothing to talk about. But once the shul is no longer serving as a shul, or it's destroyed, so you are allowed to use the shul for mundane purposes at that point.
Who said?
That's what Tosafos learns. That's the Tanai. When Rav Asi said, you should know the shuls in Bavel were built al Tanai, he wasn't telling me I'm allowed to use the shul for mundane purposes while it's built, like Rashi said. What it means is that once the shul is destroyed, then I'm allowed to use the shul for mundane purposes.
Why don't you now, say that first? Because that just like takes away the whole argument.
Well, no, because that's a side point. Oh. Rashi uses the Tanai, his understanding of the Tanai, to explain our Gemara. Tosafos proves that that's the wrong interpretation, and therefore he gives a different explanation of our Gemara. Then at the very end, Tosafos says, okay, now you're sitting here in my shir, and you're probably wondering, well, then how do I explain the Tanai in the Gemara? I rejected Rashi's, but I haven't given an alternative explanation. So his alternative explanation is that what does it mean that it's built al tanai? It means that once it's destroyed, you're allowed to use it. Now, a few points. Point number one. One of the chavrusas asked me during Seder. It's a great point. But wait a second. If the tanai means once it's destroyed, you're allowed to use it, isn't that our case? We're talking about a shul that was knocked down to be rebuilt. So why can't the answer be, you know why Rav Ashi was able to be there? Because after destruction, you're allowed to sleep in a shul. Isn't that a much easier answer that Tosfos could have said? Once you destroy a shul, you're allowed, that's the tanai. Rashi's tanai was that while it's built, you're allowed to use it. So could Rav Ashi put a shul in between the knocking down and the rebuilding? For sure. But even according to Tosfos' interpretation of the tanai, you should be able to go in. What's the answer?
Do we know for sure that it's in Bavel?
Yes, Rav Ashi lived in Bavel. Oh, yeah. And it was his shul, unless he was like visiting his cousins in Israel.
The Gemara said also that like, you can't be able to leave the grass when it's like destroyed.
Okay.
So you can't, so just because it's destroyed doesn't mean you could, like, it seems implied, doesn't mean you could, like.
But Tosfos learns that in Bavel you're allowed to. Because that's the Tanai. The Tanai is that after it's destroyed. Oh, so what's the answer? The answer goes back to what we said when we first did this sugya. We said there's an Isra D'oraisa to destroy a shul. So why are you allowed to knock down a shul to rebuild it? Well, you're allowed to do an Isra D'oraisa just to make a nicer shul? And the answer was that what? What was the answer? To knock down a shul to rebuild it is not called destroying a shul. If in your town, if in Great Neck, in Great Neck, if in Great Neck, if they knock down the Great Neck Synagogue in order to rebuild it three times as big, you might use the English word and say, oh, my shul is destroyed right now. But you wouldn't say, like, my shul's bichorbana, it's a chorban. You would say that, oh, part of the building process is you knock it down, to rebuild it. That was why we said you're allowed to knock it down in the first place. Even though there's an Isra D'oraisa to knock down a shul, that means to knock it down without intention to rebuild it. But to knock down a shul with the intention to rebuild it, that's not called destroying a shul. That's called building a shul. So this is the answer why this, what, this is the reason that Paras Yosef says this in his commentary in the back of the Gemara. This is the reason, the Prima Gadim also, I think, says this. This is the reason. Eraser. This is the reason, what did you do with the eraser? Oh, right over there. This is the reason why this would not be a good answer for Tosfos. And Tosfos therefore says stuff to the side room. Okay.
Is it still considered a shul if you knock it down and you're rebuilding it?
Yes, exactly. That's what we're saying. We're saying, or else it would be push if you could sleep there. Now, for Tosfos, I'll take a question in a second, Aryeh. For Tosfos, we just need to understand this last line of the Gemara. What does the Gemara mean? And even though, remember we're saying, Tanai means that after it's destroyed, you're allowed to, after it's destroyed, you're allowed to use it for mundane purposes. So, Tanai for Tosfos means bichorbanu. What is the end of the statement of Rav Ashi? And even though you still can't do kalos rosh, which means cheshbonos, even after the shul is destroyed, I can't do cheshbonos. Why can't I do cheshbonos after the shul is destroyed? It's destroyed. The Tanai just meant that there's a time limit on the kedusha of the shul, and once the shul is destroyed, then you're allowed to sleep and you're allowed to eat. Why can't I do cheshbonos anymore? Why can't I do cheshbonos? So Tosfos in Megillah says that this line of afal pi kein enos im kalos rosh means even though there's a tanai and even though the kedusha of your shul will leave it once it's destroyed, but while it's still standing, you can't do kalos rosh. It's like re-stressing the original halacha. What was this flow of the Gemara? You're not allowed to do kalos rosh in a shul. But in Bavel, the shuls were made al tanai, which means that once they're destroyed, you can do kalos rosh. But even though one day you'll be able to do kalos rosh, you still can't do kalos rosh, though, until that happens. This line is going on while it's standing. Now, why does the Gemara then highlight cheshbonos? Because Tosfos says cheshbonos is the lowest level of kalos rosh. And the point is that even a low-level kalos rosh, like cheshbonos, you can't do calls man that the shul is standing. Meaning, you might say, hey, my shul is going to lose kedusha one day because it was built out tonight. And once the shul is destroyed, it's going to lose its kedusha. We're going to be able to eat there and sleep there and have a party there. So maybe even now while it's standing, I can do certain things there, like cheshbonos, which is a low-level kalos rosh. Kamash malon the Gemara, you can't do afal pichein, means not even though there's a tanai in the sense that, and that tanai allows you to do things, even though there's a tanai that will one day allow you to use the shul for mundane purposes, still ein osin now kalos rosh, meaning cheshbonos. And that's because cheshbonos is the lowest level. This is Tosos and Megillah. Tosos Dibur HaMaskil, the afal pichein. What does he say? Perush bivinyana. Shaharei b'chorbana hakol shuri. Once it's destroyed, everything's allowed. So we have a machlokas Rashi Tosfos. First of all, what does this line go on? According to Rashi, this line is talking about bivinyana. Sorry, I mean, the truth is they both hold it's going on bivinyana. But they argue about, what's this line telling me? According to Rashi, afal pichein einos and kalos rosh means even though you're allowed to do kalos rosh, there are certain kalos roshes you can't do. And according to Tosfos, it's telling me even though one day you'll be able to do everything, now you can't do kalos rosh, even the lowest level of kalos rosh, i.e. cheshbonos. So where the machlokes is how do you look at cheshbonos? According to Rashi, cheshbonos is the biggest kalos rosh. And according to Tosfos, cheshbonos is the kalos rosh katan. It's the smallest of the kalos roshes. So Rashi and Tosfos read this line differently and also understand cheshbonos differently. Is cheshbonos the worst or is cheshbonos the least egregious?
Let me just explain Rashi here.
According to Rashi, the way you read the Gemara is, you're not allowed to do kalos rosh, eating, sleeping, drinking. But in Babel you can. But yet, afal pichein, there are still kalos roshes that you can't do. And what?
Even when it's built.
Everything here is talking about when it's built. You're not allowed to do kalos rosh. But in Babel you are. But even in Babel, there are certain kalos roshes you can't do, i.e. cheshbonos. Because cheshbonos is a really bad kalos rosh. That's Rashi. Tosfos, it reads like this. You're not allowed to do kalos rosh. But in Bavel, you are once the shul is destroyed. But even though one day you'll be able to, and therefore you might think, okay, so in Bavel we could be a little makil, even when it's standing, because, you know, one day it's going to be destroyed. No. Afal pichein, you can't do kalos roshes. And you know what? You can't even do the smallest kalos rosh. Calls man the shul is standing, you must be shomer on the kedusha of the shul. The fact that one day it'll become allowed, okay, we'll deal with that when that happens. But until then, the halacha stands. No kalos rosh. So for Tosos, this third line is sort of like reaffirming the original halacha. You can't do kalos rosh, and even though Babel you can once it's destroyed, until that point you can't. While for Rashi, this last line was putting a limitation on the Tanai. The Tanai allows you to do mundane things in the shul, and not all mundane things. It's a limitation on the allowance. Good? Clear? Okay. Questions? Arya, you've been waiting for a long time. Go ahead.
How could Tosfos possibly say, like, if I told you, you can, after I sell you Shalvim, you can destroy it. And then I'm like, oh, I might have thought that while you didn't sell it to me yet, I can destroy it. Like, the fact that it's not, that you made a clarification that you can't do kalos rosh until it's destroyed, you should have made kal v'chomer when it's not, like, all the more so when it's not destroyed. You shouldn't even have the thought that you could possibly do it.
I hear it's a good ha'ara. I think maybe there's, like, a psychological factor, which is that if you know, now, the Gemara sometimes says the opposite, like what you're saying. Like, the Gemara says that if you know something will one day be mutter, so you're able to control yourself until that point. Because you know it'll be mutter one day. because it has a expiration date. So you can wait until then. As opposed to something that's just like never ending, so then you can't control yourself. But there definitely is a psychological side to say the other way, which is that you will take it less seriously if you know that it's going to be allowed. If I tell you that a certain halacha only applies for the next 10 minutes, already in your head, you're taking it less seriously because you know it doesn't have stability. It doesn't have, you know, long-lasting, it doesn't have endurance or whatever.
Longevity,
there you go, that's a better word.
Doesn't it only have, like, this room, you say, we can't do causal until this room's destroyed. When the room's not here anymore, that's kind of like a completely different scenario than the room's here.
I hear. If you would like to, as I try to train you, whenever you're analyzing a machlokas, you try to identify the strengths and weaknesses of each approach. So if you would like to put this on the list of weaknesses for Tosafot's interpretation, I'm not going to argue with you. Jonathan.
According to Rashi, you can't do Teshbonos even once the shul is destroyed.
Say it again. According to Rashi.
According to Rashi, that even once the shul is destroyed, you still can't do Teshbonos.
So he doesn't address that specifically, what happens after it's destroyed. He's talking about while it's a good question. He's talking about specifically while it's around. So you can't do cheshbonos, but we don't know what he would say once it's destroyed. Bechori, he would say it is allowed, but we don't know for sure.
Hold that other kalos rushes are allowed.
After it's destroyed?
I'm saying before it's destroyed.
Yes, all other kalos rushes are allowed except for cheshbonos, because he's learning cheshbonos is the worst. Tom.
I didn't really read the last two lines of Tosfos.
I'm going to get to that right now. Okay, last point in Tosfos before we go on. According to Tosfos, there still is another problem. And the problem is that the Gemara on Chav Vav in Megillah, this is brought up by Tosfos, the only reason I'm bringing it up, Tosfos himself brings this up and the Rush brings it up. The Gemara on Daf Chav Vav says that there was a certain Amora who had a ruins of a shul in his backyard and he wanted to know, can he plant over it? It was like, ruins in his backyard. So, you know, there's an American guy who bought a property up north in Israel. The place is called, I'm slipping my name right now. I'll remember at some point while I'm talking. So he bought a certain area, and lucky him, he's digging in his backyard and like building. He built like, you know, some like bed and breakfasts there, and he realized he found a grave, totally intact cave grave, and the name on it was one of the Tanoim. And it looked like it was, and it seemed, they stood, looked into it, it was the most preserved grave of a Tana that we have in Eretz Yisrael. So he ended up having like this huge war with the antiquities department here in Israel because they wanted to take it over and make it like a tourist spot. And he saw himself as like the guard of this Tana's cave, of this Tana's kever. And you can go now, if you stay in his bed and breakfast, like one of the things they advertise is like, stay in our bed and breakfast and visit the Tana's kever. He has control. He found it in his backyard. And he now is the owner of a grave of a Tana. Right? Every country has like, you know, like in France, you can have like, you know, Mediterranean beachfront property. In Israel, you can have a grave of a Tana in your real estate. So here we have a story in the Gemara. Amora bought a property, found in his backyard ruins from an ancient shul. So he thought it was very nice, but he wanted to plow over it and plant. So he wanted to know if he can. If you were Tosos, what would you say? Sure. Once it's destroyed, it's Bavel. Oh, I forgot to tell you. The story took place in Bavel. So it's Bavel. The shuls lose their kedusha after. And that's it. You're allowed to. But that's not what the Gemara says on Daf Chav Vav. And we did this Gemara. The Gemara on Chav Vav says, oh, if you would like to use the shul and plow over it, you need to get the Zion Tove Ha'ir, the representatives, and on behalf of the whole community, they have to say that they no longer want to use the shul, and then the shul's kedusha leaves. So this is a problem for Shitas Tosfos. According to Tosfos, once the shul is destroyed, they made it Tanai. It's no longer his. You're allowed to do Kalos Rosh there. So why did this Amora need Rishus from the Zion Tove Ha'ir in order to extract the kedusha from the ruins in his backyard? So this is what Tosfos is addressing. And Tosfos says that once the shul is destroyed, you're allowed to do anything. So the way I'm reading this Tosfos is that when he says here, except for Kalos Rosh, Kidam Rinan Hasam, he's referring to that Gemara on Daf Chav Vav that says that in order to plant, you need to do even more. It's not enough for the shul to be destroyed. In order to plant, you need to remove the Kedusha formally And how do you formally remove the Kedusha? Al Yidei the Zayin Tovei Ha'ir.
Why is the Kedusha not removed?
So, apparently, this Tosfos is also accepting the idea that there are levels of Kalos Rosh. There are levels, there are degrees of inappropriate behavior for a shul. And what Tosfos basically holds is as follows. The most extreme is to plant it, meaning to use it and to change its nature and to plant it, or as Josh was suggesting during Seder today, to build flats, which for the rest of us means to turn it into an apartment complex. Not all of us, most of us. So this is the most egregious thing you can do to a shul, is to plant it and turn it into an orchard, or turn it into an apartment complex. The next thing that you can do that's egregious is achila, shena, and then the lowest thing you can do according to Tosfos is cheshbonos. So, Tosfos tells us that once the shul is destroyed, you're allowed to do these kalos roshes. You can do cheshbonos, you can even do achila the shtia. But to actually replant it, to turn it into an apartment complex, that requires a formal extraction of the Kedusha. And this is said explicitly by the Rosh. The Rosh on our sugya says that even though the Tanai is mafkia the Kedusha to the degree that you're allowed to do certain kalos roshes, like achila and shtia and shena, but it will not allow you to replant or to turn it into an apartment complex. That requires the formal extraction of Kedusha by the Zayin Tovei Ha'ir. So, that is what is said by the Rosh. If you look at Tosfos in Megillah, he says the same thing. He says, even though Kalos Rosh is allowed once it's destroyed, but not Zriya. This is Tosfos Dibra Maschil Bate. Look at the very end. The Yesh Lomar, Mishum Dezara Dezriya Havi Kalos Rosh Biyoser. And, just to finish off the argument, they printed Tosfos Yeshanim on our Masechta. Tosfos Yeshanim is a commentary of one of the Baalei Tosfos on our Masechta. It's not the same Tosfos that we have. They're slightly different. If you look there, he quotes our Tosfos and says, Kalos Rosh, Dehainu Zriya. He says it explicitly. So what I'm trying to argue is that when our Tosfos says at the end, that once it's destroyed, you can do whatever you want except for Kalos Rosh, Kidam Rinan Hassam. Hassam means Megillah Daf Chavav, not Chafes, and it means this case of Zriya. Or else there's an internal problem within Tosfos. Because Tosfos says, you're not allowed to do Kalos Rosh except after it's destroyed. And once it's destroyed, you can do whatever you want except for Kalos Rosh. Well, what then did the Tanai allow me to do? If the Tanai didn't allow me to do Kalos Rosh, what did it allow me to do? Ella, it's got to be that there's two levels of Kalos Rosh. The Tanai allows me to do regular Kalos Rosh after destruction, sleeping, eating, but it doesn't allow the high level of Kalos Rosh, i.e. Zriya. Okay. All of that was the reverberations of the answers, meaning we got different answers to Ravashi's question, and that reverberated into how you read the Gemara and Megillah and how you work out these things. So those were all the side, as I was saying to Moshe today, that there are a lot of moving parts in this sugya. Because based on how you answer our question, impacts how do you understand cheshbonos, how do you understand the nature of the Tanai. But this was all like the background, the side work that we've been doing. But we're still, right now, still have two answers to our initial question. That's what I was saying about trying to like keep things organized. We have our main question. Sometimes the answers impact how you learn the Gemara and Megillah. And that was the pieces I've been trying to put together for you. But you got to stay focused. So we have two answers so far. Either because it was in Bavel, and the Tanai allows you to use a shul for mundane purposes in Bavel, or it was because he was sleeping in a side room. But Ein Hachanami, in the main sanctuary, you would not be allowed to sleep, even in Bavel. Because the shul is built. And we need to explain that knocking down a shul to rebuild it is considered that it's built. I want to give you two other answers very quickly and in order to finish off Shia. One answer is the answer suggested by the Piskei Tosfos. Now, this answer actually appears in the manuscript version of Tosos that I was telling you about, Tosos Yeshanim. So Piskei Tosos, which is supposed to be the psukim that emerged from Tosos, this would be an indication to us that whoever wrote the Piskei Tosos was not using our Tosos. He was using a Tosos that's more similar to the Tosos that we have printed separately called Tosos Yeshanim. Piskei Tosos says, this has nothing to do with Tanai. That was all a big smoke screen, and it took us far afield. The reason why Rav Ashi was allowed to sleep in the shul has nothing to do with how we understand the Tanai. It has nothing to do with Tanai. There's just the straight-up halacha. And the halacha is called that when you're doing something for the shul itself, that's not considered kalos rosh. That's not considered using the shul for an inappropriate purpose. And why was Rav Ashi sleeping in the shul? To make sure it would get rebuilt. What was the question? All the other Rishonim until now have accepted the assumption of the question. That what Rav Ashi did seemingly is going against the Brisa that says you're not allowed to sleep in a shul. Says the Piskei Tosfos and the Tosfos Yeshanim, you're allowed to sleep in a shul if it's for the shul. It meant you're not allowed to sleep in the shul for non-shul related purposes. But for shul related purposes, of course you're allowed to. So the third answer is, it was for the shul. So then that's not considered disrespectful or kalos rosh. The Rashba says this also, but with a nuance, because he learns this into the Tanai. Meaning, for the Piskei Tosfos, this has nothing to do with the Tanai. Look at the Rashba. The Rashba is a nuance of Rashi. What do I mean he's a nuance of Rashi? The Rashba learned that the Tanai teaches me that you're allowed to use the shul while it's standing. You're allowed to use the shul. That's the Tanai. The way Rashi learned the Tanai, not the way Tosfos learned the Tanai. But the Tanai didn't allow you, like Rashi said, to use the shul for mundane purposes. The Tanai allowed you to use the shul in a kalos rosh way when it's for the shul. That was what the Tanai was. Meaning Rashi learned that the Tanai was, you can use a shul for mundane purposes. Sure, why not? Use it for whatever you want. Have a bingo night there. Have a sleepover party. The Rashba says, no, the Tanai means you're allowed to use the shul while it's standing. But the Tanai was that we can use it for shul-related things. So if we have to have like a board meeting for the shul, we can have a board meeting in the sanctuary, even while it's standing. Because that's shul-related. So he accepts Rashi's liberal reading of the Tanai, but he understands it in a very limited way. Okay, one last thing because I want to end. Did my paper drop? Yeah. The last explanation is also for the Rashba, and the Rashba gives a different explanation, which is very important, l'halacha, and he says that maybe the reason Rav Ashi was allowed to sleep in the shul is because Talmidei Chachamim, who use the shul all the time, have different rules. Meaning the general rule is you're not allowed to sleep in a shul. That doesn't apply to a Talmid Chacham who's in the shul all the time. And this is a very important halacha that's brought down, because even though you're not really supposed to eat in a shul and sleep in a shul, the poskim are very makel for Talmidei Yeshiva and Rabbanim who are in the shul all day. If you're a Baal Bas and you're working in the law firm and you come for an hour at night to learn a chavrusa, then you're not allowed to eat there, you're not allowed to sleep there, because you're only coming for an hour. But if you're spending the whole day in the shul learning and davening and you're all day in the shul becomes your home. And therefore you're allowed to be more makel with the things that you do in the shul. And this, if you take a look, it's important to halacha l'maisa, you take a look at the halacha section, the Mishnah Berurah is here. The Mishnah Berurah is makel for a lot of, is a very important kula for us, or else we wouldn't be able to bring a shul, a drink into the base medrash. You wouldn't be able to put your head down for 20 minutes and take a base nap. If you haven't yet perfected base naps, you will. As you like learn how to spin the, spin the pencil on your finger, you'll also perfect the base nap. I remember once a guy behind me went down for a tachnun during mincha, and he was out for like an hour and a half of afternoon seder. And we were like cheshbening if he just like had a lot of kavanah for his tachnun, or if he was just like out for the count for an hour and a half. But the kula for a ben yeshiva to be able to eat a little bit, drink. Some base medrashes are still very machbit about it. Kedushas based on kenesses and based on medrash. But if you would try to be makel, it would be because of this Rashba who says that for a Talmud Chacham, some of these rules about kalos rosh, that's not considered kalos rosh for a Talmud Chacham who's in the base medrash all the time for him to do it. So that could be another answer for Rav Ashi. That the reason Rav Ashi was allowed to sleep in the shul is because this was his shul. He spent all day in that shul. And therefore, he was allowed to eat there and he was allowed to take a nap there as well. So, ultimately, we saw four answers to our question. In order to understand the answers and analyze them well, we had to get all amok in the sugyas in Megillah, but ultimately we got for ourselves four answers to the question of why was Rav Ashi allowed to sleep in the shul. Everyone have a fabulous day.